Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. With coronavirus cases surging across the United States, what's the difference between President Trump and Mitch McConnell when it comes to businesses, schools, and masks? Well, Trump says businesses and schools should fully reopen and wear a mask or not, whatever. It's like Trump and the Confederate flag. Fly it or not, whatever. McConnell, in case you haven't noticed, has been running around wearing a mask and promoting wearing a mask in front of every camera that'll record him. But listen to the context. This is a very short clip, so listen carefully. Here we go.
Since we're not going to shut the economy down again, we don't have enough money we can borrow to continue to prop up the economy indefinitely. We have to work smart, which brings me back to the mask.
Since the economy isn't shutting down again, bing, and since we can't afford a big new relief bill, bing, the only thing left is get out there in the virus-soaked world, people, and wear a mask. Okay, not the only thing, but that was McConnell on WHAS-TV in Louisville. Democrats want about a $3 billion new relief package with unemployment and eviction threats and food insecurity still so rampant. McConnell, who controls the Senate, wants about $1 billion. Less ability to stay home, more ability to buy masks. Let's get a Democratic response to that, and we'll talk about other things, too, with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Senator, it's always a pleasure. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's a delight to be on.
So McConnell is starting to talk about some kind of fifth stimulus package that could pass the Senate this month. So how far apart are you and he here on July 8th?
Well, it sounds like we're very far apart. First of all, I was fairly outraged that Mitch McConnell would not allow us to debate and vote on the COVID package passed by the House weeks ago.
That's the $3 billion
delay,
package, yes.
So $3 trillion.
Trillion, I'm sorry, trillion. Forgive me. Oh,
yes,
I said billion in the intro before, too. Of course, it's trillion. I apologize.
No worries. That package was robust because it did what is needed to be done. First of all, it delivered direct relief to state, local, and tribal governments, which is our top priority in the next relief package. Our state, our cities, they are so depleted of resources because there's been no revenue because businesses have been closed to protect families. So the HEROES Act, it was passed in May, allocated $1 trillion just for state and local relief. I worked with Senator Schumer and several of our representatives, Delgado, Selden, and others, to create a framework for local relief in that bill. When we talk about state and local relief, what we're talking about is teachers and firefighters and healthcare workers and first responders. So we really can't afford to let them down. I also think it's important that we prioritize our workers, families, hospitals, small business, and healthcare providers. In that regard, I want to increase the amount of money that we give for food stamps, for snacks. There's so many families that are going to bed hungry. So many kids aren't getting their school lunches. They're not getting their main meal of the day. So we have to increase food security. We need more money for small businesses that are really crumbling at this point. Our hospitals still need massive relief, and we need structural change. We need paid family leave. We need affordable and more available daycare and childcare. We need real structural help, including extending the unemployment benefits and the requirement that people can't be evicted from their home.
Here's Majority Leader McConnell again on the items he wants to see in a new bill. He lists them here in this short clip.
Liability protection,
kids in school,
jobs, and yes,
and health care.
So that was a montage of him listing different things at different times. But let me ask you about one of the middle items there, kids in school. I think it's going to be common around the country this fall for schools to reopen in person, but with expensive protocols like smaller classes for physical distancing, which will require more space, staggered shifts requiring longer days' pay, more school nurses and testing and PPEs on premises, things like that. So what do you think the federal role is in helping especially lesser funded school districts pay for those costs. It sounds like you and McConnell or the Democrats and the Republicans might be on the same page with respect to that. How much so?
So, I know I've heard some reporting that it would take something like $200 billion to reopen schools. And so far, we've only given about $14 billion. And so I'm concerned that if schools are going to be asked to reopen, which I desperately hope they will as a parent first, they need resources to do it appropriately. So I, as a parent, I went through last semester with a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old. The 16-year-old did great. Theo had no problem keeping up, doing his studies, understanding what to do and how to do it. But the 12-year-old, Henry, he struggled much more. If something wasn't required, he didn't want to do it. He missed his friends. He was trying to use every bit of online activities to socialize, which meant too much online time. It just was very difficult to convey coursework to a 12-year-old. So I'm very hopeful that if we can give our schools resources, that they will then be able to open. They can have some measure of testing. I wish we could get to universal testing. I think that would be so much better. But obviously, we've seen struggles all across the country with just getting basic testing up and running. I think it's important that younger kids can have some more classroom time because I think it's much harder for them to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that we protect our teachers and our vulnerable individuals. You know, we don't want kids bringing COVID home to grandparents or to people with immunodeficiency conditions. And so there's a lot of work to do, and it's gonna take a lot of planning. It's gonna take a lot of resources. And I know the American people are up to this, and I know our teachers and our schools can do this, but we need to support them, and that means giving more resources. And so I'm in favor of more resources, not less.
So in the context of that request for more resources and all those complexities that you just laid out, it sounds like you do want schools to reopen in the fall on balance, and Governor Cuomo hasn't made that decision yet for New York State. Are you saying, as part of your answer, and again, acknowledging all the different situational elements you described there, but as part of that, you saying to Governor Cuomo, yes, reopen the schools in New York?
As a parent, I am very much in favor of reopening our schools as soon as it's safe. But as a parent, I'm also concerned about safety. As a senator, my job is to give the governor as many resources as I can. And that's why getting McConnell to the table to do the state and local is essential. That $1 trillion for state and local is beyond important to the governor because he doesn't have the resources to keep, you know, the first responders in place. And it's very important that our cities and our local governments get the resources so they have what they need. I think transportation is going to be an issue. Just think of all the kids who might have to take a subway to school or have to take public transportation to school. We want to make sure that's safe too. And so that might need an increase in busing because you might be able to do busing in a more safe way than mass transit. So again, it's all about resources from my perspective. But I do hope we get the resources behind a reopening so we can do it, so kids can keep learning, and we can do it safely. And so I'm really hoping that we do reopen schools, Brian. And I'm going to do my part to get the resources there so it can be done safely.
Listeners, we can take your questions for New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Constituents and listeners in other states, we welcome your calls at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280 for Senator Gillibrand today. You know, with the virus surging in states, with governors who seem ideologically opposed to protecting their citizens, I'm starting to think a radical thought. Maybe New York and the other states in the Northeast Compact should consider going further and close off the Northeast to travelers from the willfully infected states, like we closed down the country to travel from China, and like Europe now has shut down travel from here. All we have is these voluntary, unenforceable 2-week quarantines. I just don't know how effective they could be. And, you know, it's coming up the coast. Delaware, right there on New Jersey's southern border, is the latest state we are requiring quarantines from. My question is, has the thought crossed your mind? And I'm not proposing anything, but I'm raising the question. And I wonder if it's crossed your mind Or would you ever consider sealing the Northeast off for a while after having done this right when other states have refused?
You know, I that would give me concern, to be honest. I didn't like how New Yorkers were treated during our surge. I didn't like people trying to demonize New York and New York and New Jersey because of our spikes. I would hope that we as a country recognize we all have to protect one another. And I also believe that every person has a duty, a duty to protect other people. And I think that means people should be vigilant about wearing their masks. I think we should be vigilant about social distancing. I think we should be vigilant about quarantining. So if you are coming from a state with a high infection rate, just care about the people around you. And if you do have to go to a different part of the country for a reason that's important to you, for a family reason, whatever it might be, quarantine. Do the kind and thoughtful thing. So I don't want us to turn states against states. I think President Trump is doing his fair share of dividing the country and is doing so much damage by constantly demonizing different groups of people. And I don't think we should focus on that solution. I think we should focus on caring about one another, treating others the way you'd want to be treated, really trying to implement the golden rule as much as we can.
Maybe it's not your job in the Senate. Maybe this is for Albany and Trenton and Hartford, et cetera, but can these quarantines be enforced?
I don't know. That's a question I'm not sure about. I do believe, though, that we should just ask more of the American public. And I think they do, you know, they are people who care about others, and we should just ask them to please continue to be vigilant about stopping the spread. If each one of us take it upon ourselves to wear our masks, to socially distance, to protect others around us, and continually talking about it so people don't forget. I mean, one of the things that I've seen around the country is when these governors say, well, there's nothing to worry about, we can do what we want, we don't need to follow the rules, you know, they are projecting false and harmful ideas about how this virus spread. And they are doing a grave disservice to the nation and a grave disservice to vulnerable people and are responsible. So we need to ask more of our elected leaders to show how we should do this and to do so carefully.
Let's take a phone call. Brett in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Hi, Brett.
Hi. Good morning, guys. Thanks for the time. Listen, everyone's talking about, I want to hear more about the unextended benefits for workers and also the stimulus. Like, I'm a substitute teacher at a charter school. I have no idea what's happening for the year. So can we talk a little more about unextended benefits and what the plan is, and also about the stimulus checks? And I'll take my call off the air.
Brett, thank you very much. So extended unemployment benefits and the other things that go with that. Senator Leader McConnell wants any new stimulus bill focused on lower income people. He says $40,000 a year or less income compared to the previous checks, which were a sliding scale up to $99,000 per individual. You know, that's how much they could have made to get somewhat of a stimulus check. And he wants it more focused on the hospitality industry because it's restaurants and hotels, for example, that are taking the longest term hits. So, A, to the caller's specific question about extended unemployment benefits, which I think are going to run out at the end of this month, and to the larger question of how much to focus this on lower income people in any new relief package.
So, thank you. To your caller for asking that question, because a lot of families are deeply anxious about the weeks ahead. And most of the unemployment insurance benefits run out by the end of this month, as does the restrictions for evicting people. So millions of people have lost their job because of no fault of their own, and we have to ensure that each one has enough money to feed their families, keep a roof over their heads, pay their bills. So I very much support extending the unemployment insurance and benefits. And the legislation that Senator Schumer and others and I have is to extend it all the way into 2021, which I think is prudent because we don't know how long it's going to take to get a vaccine. We don't know how long it's going to take to end these constant resurgences because this is a virus that's highly contagious. And so anytime we drop our guard, you see massive resurgences. And so I want to get that unemployment extended till next year. And I want to make sure that we also have other support for our first responders and heroes. Part of the HEROES Act would provide additional money for the nurses, the EMTs, the hospital workers, the pharmacy workers, the grocery store workers, to give them something akin to time and a half because they are still on the front lines taking risks every day. So we want to continue to do that. And then last, to begin to deal with unemployment, we have to start retraining workers for jobs that are available. And one idea I had was to create a health force to train 1 million workers in healthcare so we can do the support work that's needed to deal with a pandemic, whether it's increasing testing, which still is not readily available, to actually implementing vaccinations. And so we need those workers available now, and we should be spending the money to retrain any unemployed worker who would like those jobs.
Yeah, and I think you and the caller shine a light on one of the biggest underlying factors right now as we sit here in July, which is that with coronavirus cases surging, businesses are reclosing in places like Texas and Florida and delaying their reopenings in places like New York. And that means unemployment will remain high in the United States for many more months on end. So I think what's been missing, at least a little bit, from the public conversation that was front and center in the early days in April and May is a big debate about what kinds of relief the federal government needs to provide. Maybe that's coming back now with appearances like this one and with McConnell seeming to soften on some kind of next phase relief bill. But I think these original ones, you know, also the small business loans, the PPP loans, which were only for 2 months, were designed to last for a short time when it was thought that maybe the COVID right. shutdowns would be a really short-term thing. I think now, unfortunately, correct. We know better.
You're exactly right, Brian. And so the truth is, the way we designed these programs initially was just to directly send money to as many businesses as we could so they could keep paying their employees. And what makes me so frustrated, Brian, is if we had paid leave in place before this pandemic, we would have had the facility to do that. Because what paid leave is supposed to be, during any emergency that you may need 3 months off, whether it's a new baby, whether it's a dying parent, whether you're sick yourself or a sick child, or in this instance, school closings for 3 months, you can keep your job, be paid a percentage of your income, it was 66% of your income, up to $4,000 a month, and still be employed and still keep your insurance. That would have been so helpful because everyone could have been paid their salary or a portion of their salary and guaranteed their spot in that company or in that business, in that small business. And so it was for everyone and it would have worked. And so we don't have that. But in this next HEROES bill, we're going to try to put that in place. We want to have universal paid leave. We want to have universal sick days. And that's in the House bill. So we want to do that if we can get that debated in the Senate. But for the business loan specifically, we've seen a lot of trouble with it. It doesn't work well for tourism. It doesn't work well for restaurants because the way it was designed was you keep paying all your employees with the assumption you're going to be reopened in a month or two. Well, these industries are not going to reopen in the same way that they closed. We're not going to be able to have in-restaurant dining packed to the gills like they normally would have. That business model is no longer going to be viable. So we need to look at how do we reopen restaurant and tourism in a way that supports social distancing, that supports the need for social distancing for another probably 6 to 9 months until we have a vaccine and we can get it literally available to everyone for maybe a year. And so that's the biggest challenge, Brian, is how do you yeah. build a program that has the flexibility so if a restaurant does want to reopen, they can reopen with 50% of their workforce because they're only going to have half the number of customers because they're going to space out dining or they're only going to restrict to outside dining. that's a huge challenge. And so,
do you have an answer to that? Do you have how do we design it for restaurants in particular and others in the hospitality industry that aren't going to be able to reopen fully?
So I think they'll need access to grant money. They'll need so right now the way the program's written, it requires you to hire back all your employees. That provision has to be deleted. And you can certify. You can say, this is my business plan. I'm going to hire back X number of employees. This is how I'm going to run the business. And then you should be able to get access to that loan / grant. Because we just need a different approach for restaurants and for tourism or any industry that cannot open at full capacity because of the need for social distancing. And we have smart people who can figure this out and provide a certification for businesses that are earnestly doing the right thing but can't hire back all employees. Because that's what we need. So we need far more flexibility to the existing program, that they can use those funds, for example, over a 2-year period, that they can show what their business plan is and use it for all those costs. Because we want businesses to survive this. We don't want everyone to be going out of business. We want them to survive it and hire back as many employees that is legitimate for their business plan based on the requirements of social distancing.
Tyson,
so it's different than we imagined it 3 months ago, and that's why you have to rewrite it.
Tyson in Corona, Queens. You're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hello, Tyson.
Hello, Brian. Hello, Senator. I have the answer.
Uh-oh.
You need to take people like Jeff Bezos, the Walton family, Bill Gates, pharma, all of the Republican PACs, and all the conservative conglomerates out there, and pass a bill that would put money back into the small businesses, back into the mom-and-pop stores, back into all of the museums and the cultural institutions that aren't closed, the NEA, all these organizations that depend on people coming in, and that way all the rich people would not be able to get even more rich, because I've heard that Jeff Bezos has made $31 billion in this pandemic, and it's time for the big businesses and the big pharmas of the world to realize that they are Americans, that they are patriots, and they can serve all the people, much unlike the sycophants on the other side of the aisle who only want to serve themselves.
Tyson, thank you for your call. Senator, what about that with respect especially to the redistribution of wealth, I think it's fair to call it, that's taking place? Because, yeah, I read that Jeff Bezos's wealth has hit a new record, and he mentions the Walton family, owners of Walmart, and so many local stores are shut down or limited, and so many more people are ordering from Amazon and Walmart, and so they're making even more profits. And yes, it's a shift from profits at the local level to profits like to giants like those. Can some kind of special tax or something be imposed?
Well, yeah, there's an entire agenda about how to create a better safety net for people who are disproportionately harmed because of the economy today, because of institutional racism, because of the impact of COVID, and structural changes. And those big ideas are ones that I think this next campaign for president is about. Joe Biden wants to heal the soul of America, and what he's talking about is changing how the economy works so it can actually work for everybody. And there's lots of unfairness in the current economy. You mentioned Jeff Bezos and the billions he's made in this epidemic. Look also at the other side. Who's bearing the brunt of this epidemic? People of color, people in essential services and essential industries. They tend to be women. They tend to be women of color. So you look at who's working in our grocery stores, who's looking at working in our pharmacies, our EMTs, our first responders, our nurses. These are the workers that this country will literally fall apart if they don't show up to work every day. The food workers, the workers who are in packing, manufacturing for food, in working on farms. And so Brian, the goal is to say, how do we reimagine this economy in a way that works for everyone? So first, make sure everybody who is unemployed right now gets the job training they need, and to make sure they are trained in industries that are growing. So that's the health force, healthcare workers, in education, in new STEM fields. So create job training program. In fact, like Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to do a long time ago, end unemployment. Just literally have full employment in this country. That should be our goal. The way you pay for it is by looking at our tax code. Just as the caller intimated, we have companies, they're still getting tax breaks for sending their jobs overseas. President Trump, and what we've heard in reporting of the most recent week, who's getting these big loans, who's getting the PPP grants, many of them are donors, many of them are companies that these were not intended for, so we need full transparency and accountability there. And we need to look at how do we rebuild an economy that can protect people, but also make up for generations of discrimination. So large structural change like national pay leave, universal sick days, baby bonds, ideas like postal banking. These are ideas that bring capital to communities of color, to small businesses, to the little guy who's left behind, to rural areas. And that is where the funds aren't going. That is what's being depleted under COVID. And unfortunately, the largest companies and the wealthiest individuals are just getting wealthier. And unfortunately, that's the world under President Trump. Everything he does funds large corporations, wealthy individuals. His tax plan, $1.5 trillion, disproportionately went to the wealthiest Americans and the most successful companies. So it is no surprise that President Trump continues to make sure that the rich are rewarded and working poor and lower income individuals are struggling even more. And this pandemic, unfortunately, has laid bare those inequities, and we need to go straight at them. And that means a robust plan for rebuilding the economy that looks at institutional bias in terms of racism, in terms of communities left behind, in terms of parts of rural America. And we can do that, but we need a different president, and that's why I support Vice President Biden. But we also need different leaders across the country, because we've seen, again, time and time again, some of these Republican governors fly in the face of common sense, disproportionately spreading, you know, absolutely misinformation and harming people by their lies and their refusal to listen to the healthcare professionals.
You mentioned full employment. Here's a question coming from Twitter. Listener writing on Twitter, can you ask the senator if now is the time to move on guaranteed jobs program? Clearly, free market is failing. That would be a federally guaranteed job. That's part of the Green New Deal, as you know.
So the way I imagine that is guaranteed job training, because what you want is you want to have a pipeline for the job training into jobs. And what we've done in New York and different places for different types of training has really worked. You look at New York City, we have a training not-for-profit called Perscola, and they, before the pandemic, had trained 800 people in STEM fields, in computer engineering, in fixing and building computers, in tech jobs, in coding, and it really worked. And those were people who were underemployed, or who were in fields they didn't like, or really wanted to just get better education. And that training was free. In upstate New York, when they needed advanced welders at Bombardier, they went to the local community college. They said, can you offer this coursework in advanced welding? And they offered it, and they've placed, I think, hundreds of workers over the years through that program alone. So what I believe in is that every person who's unemployed or underemployed is guaranteed free job training through community colleges and state schools to get a higher paying job. And the reason why I like that framing so much better is because you are training someone for careers in industries that we need workers desperately. And you are guaranteeing the pathway for them to get the job until they get a job. And so that's how I would guarantee full employment.
So train them for the private sector.
Use the community schools. Correct. Use the community colleges, use the state schools. That works, I think, better than making up jobs perhaps that aren't as urgently needed. I think it's so much better to just create the pipeline for every job that's open in a region, because first of all, workers don't want to move. They don't want to have to relocate if they don't have to. They don't even necessarily want to change industries. So if you're in manufacturing and you've lost your manufacturing job, you don't want to be trained for a service industry that's different. You might want to just learn how to build something else. So if you were working, let's just say coal mining, well, why not retrain that worker specifically in solar energy, solar manufacturing, or in other kinds of green energy that we want to invest in? And then what the government can pay for is investing in the creation of that manufacturing space and the creation of the educational program, which already exists in every community college and state school across the country.
I understand.
And I've toured these training programs throughout New York, and they work. They absolutely work.
So we're getting questions like that about jobs, guaranteed jobs. We're also getting questions about guaranteed housing, considering the housing crisis that the coronavirus is causing and the eviction threats that you mentioned earlier. One of our listeners asks on Twitter, since you talked about, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have that tweet in front of me anymore, but it was basically since you talked about the problems with the hotel industry not at full occupancy, would you support using more hotel rooms for homeless people so they have some place to live? And I'm going to put a human individual face or voice on that by taking Laura in Brooklyn, who I think has a personal housing crisis right now. Laura, you're on WNYC with Senator Gillibrand. Hello.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. As I said when I called in months ago, I heard you, Senator, talking on the phone, and I heard the way you handled a particular case, and I'm not the kind of person that's really moved by things like that, but you moved me, like in that I feel you really do care. Okay. Since then, I called your office basically asking to see if there was a constituent aide or somebody there that could help me with my personal problems. And I'm not sure if I'm still in contact with anybody from there. I'm not sure. There's been so many people. My story is I'm homeless. I'm living in my car. I'm immune compromised. I can't go live in a shelter. That's going to make me sick before virus. Now you put virus into it and I'm out, you know?
And Laura, is there a specific kind of help you're looking for from the senator's office or from the government per se?
Is there what?
A specific kind of help for your situation that you're looking for from the senator?
All right. What I need is what most people have, which is like a bestie, somebody you can trust. One of my physical disabilities is my fingers. So to go online and go do this and go do that, it really puts me off. I can't physically. My hands are like I'm wearing boxing gloves. So pressing buttons is a real deal. My friend who helped me with that, I lost her, unfortunately, to the virus.
Oh.
So, you know, she was also whom I was supposed to move in with. So I'm a complete mess.
And Laura, I'm going to have to leave it there. I apologize, but I want to take your contact information off the air and make sure that the senator's office gets back to you. It sounds like she's had some contact with your office, but would you follow up with Laura again?
Yes, please. So, Laura, I'm really sorry that you are going through this unbelievable, horrible, horrible time. I can't imagine how hard it is when you are both immunocompromised and have some other health disabilities that make it harder for you to access support. So if you give us your number off the air, we will call you and give you whatever contact information or whatever supports we can find for you in your community. So if you need access to housing.
All right.
To your broader question, Brian,
yes.
I think, you know, we are the wealthiest country in the world. No one in this country should be homeless, period. Like, that has got to be our goal, no homelessness. And I think you can absolutely use hotels as transitional housing, but I think they're inadequate because a lot of the hotels that we use for homelessness often aren't the kind of standards that families feel comfortable living in. And so sometimes they are infested with vermin and rats. And I mean, we've heard and read the stories throughout New York. So what I would like to do long term is really provide resources for permanent housing, to have transitional housing be within communities where instead of paying for shelters and paying for hotel rooms, that we actually buy housing. I've seen this across the country. I've seen when a community not-for-profit buys apartment buildings, buys different homes in a region, and it's used constantly as transition housing for a homeless family to get the family into a house, get job training if there needs to be addiction counseling or any other services needed, get them 100% focused on rebuilding and being able to get someone employed so they could then take these expenses for themselves over time. And that works. And so we should be building and buying transitional housing and using 360 degree counseling so that every need of that family is being met so they can get on their own feet and be able to pay for their own housing. And then also acquire very low income housing so that they can offer low income rates and keep them focused. I've seen that working in other states and it's quite inspiring. So I think we should aim to do that globally. During this pandemic, we have our legislation right now that we want to put forward in the next COVID package. We want to have the Protecting Renters from Evictions and Fees Act, and that basically will protect renters from immediate displacement and prohibit evictions based on non-payment of rent. And this bill will prohibit any fines or charges associated with a missed rental payment, and that will take people into next year until we know we have the possibility of vaccinations and being able to emerge from COVID.
Senator, I know we're out of time and you have to go to your next thing. Thank you for covering so much ground with us today and look forward to next time.
Well, God bless you, Brian, and stay safe.